Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I always sort of felt like this business is a production, like we're on stage and we really are. So I sort of feel like you work, you use it.
Yes.
My first table, I'm waiting tables tonight. My first table is going to be extra, you know, I'm going to be theatrical for sure. That's my style anyway. I'm very, you know, like, that's my personality. So, yeah, they're going to get dinner and a show tonight probably. I don't know. Because I'll be nervous.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at the Times. Today's topic, before we write. So for both of us, it's very important to have conversations around story structure before Lane starts to write. It helps me to see what she has to work with. It helps her to talk through the reporting and judge the quality of the scenes and the details. Most importantly, it puts us on the same page, and it helps us save time on the back end. These conversations can take 5 minutes or they can take an hour. I'm generally taking notes on what Lane says. That's just part of my process. It helps me to stay on track. Lane and I have been thinking about an episode where we discuss a story that she hasn't written yet and let you guys sit in on one of these story structure conversations. So this is it. We're going to talk about The Waitress. I'll let Lane explain the idea and the person that she's been following for the last few weeks. And then we'll get to breaking down what she has. So that voice you heard at the beginning was Allison Harris, the woman we're talking about. So Lane, talk about Allison Harris.
So I had the idea of, you know, I always do this, think about who's got something at stake, you know, when there's a news event going on. And it struck me, I was out at the bars on St. Patrick's Day when they shut everybody down. Last call was at 5 o'clock. Everybody had to go home.
Was at the bars for work. Okay, gotcha.
I was sober at this bar, too. It was very, 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 very drunk people all the afternoon. But I kept thinking about, you know, all of the servers and the bartenders who didn't want to go home. It was like their busiest day of the year for a lot of them on St. Patrick's Day, the beginning of spring break for a lot of people. And all of a sudden, you know, at 5 o'clock, everything is shut off and they don't know when they're going to come back to work and what it's going to look like when they come back to work or if they're going to come back to work. And, you know, that population of people, so many of them live paycheck to paycheck. I know a lot of them don't have insurance, health insurance. And I just thought, what are they going to do? You know, what is that going to look like for all these literally thousands and thousands of people just in Tampa Bay who are now out of work? And also, you know, because restaurant work, well, there's the front of the operation where the waitresses and servers and hostesses are, and then there's also the back of the house. So it's not just the servers, it's the cooks and the dishwashers and the busboys too. So I think I talked to you and said, hey, I'd like to do a story kind of following someone through this shutdown, not knowing when or if it was going to end or what it was going to look like, but just sort of like walking in their shoes. And I put a call out on Facebook that a bunch of people retweeted and shared on Facebook, just looking for a server who would sort of let me follow them through this. And Allie was one of the people who responded, Allison Harris, and I didn't know that I knew her. It was funny because we were corresponding and I didn't see her picture, you know, her Facebook picture wasn't her picture. And so finally I realized who it was. She had been a server at a restaurant where my son washed dishes like 10 years ago. So I'd known her as a coworker of Ryland's and I knew she had a daughter the same age as my son. So anyway, that's who I hooked up with this woman. She's 40 years old. She's got 3 kids. She's been a waitress all her life, like since she was 16, 17 years old. Didn't ever really entertain the notion of doing anything else and was kind of devastated not only for the loss of income and like, how am I going to pay my rent, but also kind of her identity is wrapped up in serving people and all the conversations she has all day long with strangers. And she was, by the time I think I got with her on the 21st or 20, so it'd been about a week. I've met with her in person about a week after the restaurants had shut down, and she was already starting to feel lonely and displaced. And so I've been following her since the beginning of the shutdown.
Okay. So what do we talk about the scenes you have with her?
So I was going back through my notes yesterday, and I don't have a lot of scenes. Actually, I have an initial interview where I sat on her porch for about 2.5 hours with James, our photographer, and we sort of did the, like, tell me the story of your life type interview. And then we went back like a week later, and we're there when she was homeschooling her son, who's in fourth grade. So we have a scene in the kitchen where she's kind of making lunch while he's working on adding fractions, and there's some cute interplay between them. He was really struggling with homeschooling and trying to learn fractions online, like a video. So I think, you know, there was a little bit of every parent's going through this now type piece of it too. And then everything else I have really pretty much is on the phone with her, you know. I went on this past Wednesday when Bodega, one of the restaurants, reopened, and I have a little bit of scene, but she wasn't there when I was there. So I don't even know if I want to use that, but today I'm going to go at 4 o'clock. She goes back to work today at 4 o'clock, and she's so excited. I talked to her last night. And so I'm going to be there to do her shift tonight, her first shift back. I reported the last shift in the restaurant, and she sent me a really cute little video where she's dancing with the dishwasher and they're sort of saying goodbye. So I was thinking I could start it with her, you know, being sent home, and here's her last shift she works, and then end it with her first shift back, in terms of what the timeline illustrates.
So you had, so you kind of had her recreate that moment, and you have video from that moment.
Yeah, she sent me a little video. She goes, "It's really silly, but we were having a dance, and it's really cute." They didn't know when they'd see each other again, type of a thing. And so she went back to the restaurant on Wednesday and Thursday and cleaned. And so she talked about that, what it was like to be back there. They moved all the tables outside. They, you know, socially distanced. They took the bar stools out. You know, they're trying to find the new world order over there. And she talked about how great it was to be back in the restaurant again at her, you know, her place. But she's also really scared. She's like, "I don't want to say I'm paranoid, but I'm kind of paranoid." You know, she was one of those people who did not want to go to the grocery store even, and who walked to the other side of the street when someone was coming. And she's very worried about getting her kids sick, getting her parents sick, and just being out there in the world, being exposed again, because she really was really self-isolating. You know, she's divorced and shares custody of their 9-year-old. And the only place that she went was either to pick him up or to take a bike ride with him. And other than that, they like barely left the house. So she's, I think, you know, it went from being, her fear went from, am I going to lose everything? Am I going to be, she got down to $160 in her bank account, and that was all she had. So her fear went from being like economic disaster and how am I going to feed my kids to, oh my God, I got to go back in the world and work to feed my kids. But this virus is lurking out there and it's very present for her.
What about the food stamp angle? I mean, not angle, but the idea that she had to ask for help. I mean, how much do you have of that? And do you feel like that needs to work its way in here?
Yeah. So that's another theme that kind of runs through it is money and assistance. She went online to apply for unemployment like the day after they got shut down, and she still hasn't gotten it.
Welcome to Florida.
Thanks, Florida. And all of her friends are in the same situation, you know, like everybody she works with is in the same situation. So there are money themes. She didn't want to ask for food stamps. She finally got food stamps. She applied for a small business loan for $500 from the city of St. Pete and was turned down because her restaurant hadn't been open long enough. So a bunch of bureaucracy type stuff, you know, going on. Didn't want to ask for help, but her parents kept saying, "Are you okay?" And so she would like go mow their yard. She ran errands for her mom. She moved furniture for her dad. She's like, "I'm 40 years old. I'm back making, you know, gas money from my mom and dad." But So that economic part of it, you know, definitely, I think everybody who's looking for unemployment could relate to that, you know.
So
she got her stimulus. The first thing she did was pay off her landlord who'd given her a break. She kept saying how lucky she was because her landlord had said, you know, I'm not going to kick you out. You're not going to be homeless. Just pay me what you can, you know, when you can. And so she has already spent, you know, money on her rent. And then the other theme, I think we've talked a little bit about this, is food, right? Like the idea, like how, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people. Like, I never thought about dinner until I was hungry at the end of the day and went, oh shoot, what are we going to do for dinner? And now there's nothing else to plan. So even like Stephanie's column was talking about, even if the only thing you plan is dinner, you know, food's become much more important to a lot of people in this lockdown. And a lot more people are cooking and a lot more people are rationing and a lot more people are planning around like, I'm only going to go to the grocery, you know, once a month or whatever. And so she had a lot of, food themes going on. You know, she likes to cook, but she didn't really cook dinner for her family often because she was working most shifts. So now she's been cooking every single day. She's been cooking things she's never cooked before. She's been trying new recipes on her kid, who's kind of a finicky eater. And then things like I asked him what he missed most about 3 weeks in, and he was like, French fries, you know, this little kid hadn't had French fries in all this time. And she was talking about some of the food from the restaurant she missed. And, you know, they're not going to be able to, go back to the same old menu at the restaurant. They had to change the menu because some of the food suppliers have fallen out now. So, you know, there's definitely a theme of food and nurturing and, I wrote down, you know, every time I talked to her what she'd made for dinner, and she was like, oh, today I tried beef stroganoff, you know, today I made bone marrow stock and all these exotic things. The restaurant had, when they shut down, they let all their workers come and take the food. So she had grabbed all this produce and food from the restaurant, kind of exotic Lebanese type stuff, and was trying to cook that at home too.
So one of the biggest, the most important question we ask ourselves, you know, what's the point of this story? What are we hoping readers take away from this story?
Yeah, and that's one thing, you know, I don't know what is going to surprise people the most about this story. She's the face of one of 800,000 people in Florida who's lost their job, you know, in the restaurant industry. And I think that's the best takeaway, is like, what is it like for these people that serve your lunch, that bring your drinks, you know, that you see every day and maybe take for granted. But also throughout the reporting, you know, throughout this time, it's been like, okay, now what is it going to look like? Like, is it ever going to come back? Are we ever going to feel comfortable dining out in a crowded restaurant? Are we ever going to feel like, yeah, we want to linger for a couple hours here with surrounded by strangers and food made by strangers? And so I think that also sort of casting forward to see how things, we're not going to have the answer to that yet, I don't think, but there's a lot of musing about it. I interviewed the owner of the restaurant for a long time too, and he was talking about all these different things they're going to have to change and do differently, and you know, what's the dining world going to look like.
So yeah, I mean, I like, you know, I was thinking about the words that have popped up to me, of course, fear and food and identity, because that really struck me too, our conversations. And that's another thing, Lane and I try to talk as she's reporting, right? So she'll fill me in on what the latest interview was like, what she just got. So, you know, we keep up as we go along. But you were talking about comparing her to us, that, you know, we do a job that we really love and we don't know what we'd do if we didn't do this job. So do you really, like, she doesn't really want to think about doing something else because there's so much that she enjoys about what she does when she does it. So identity seemed like a pretty strong thread too through here.
Absolutely. And you know, I think that was part of what she was struggling with, was not only not working and talking to people, but who am I if I don't do this? You know, some of her friends from the restaurant, one of them went to work at Trader Joe's. One of them went to work at a call center, you know, so other people in her restaurant world were finding other jobs, but she didn't even want to think about that possibility, you know.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I do like fear as a sort of primary thread, though. I think because, you know, especially if you cast back to that moment when they know that they're going to lose their jobs and for however long. And like you said, so she's in that moment, it's about the being scared that she can't pay her rent, that she can't, you know, she's not going to be able to get by. And now we're coming back. And even though she knows she wants to get back to it and she loves it, it's scary in a different way. So I don't know. And I think that that's kind of cool. And then if you introduce it to this person whose identity is wrapped around all of this and wrapped around food and kind of how the dynamics at play over the last few weeks as she sort of shifted gears, I think that's pretty cool. Just, you know, make that the, you know, you're coming in that way and you're going out that way, still scared, but scared in a different way.
A different way, scared of different things. Yeah.
Lane has put together for reference a timeline that's helpful to her, but it's also helpful to me. And we'll do this a lot of times with the story. And this one, you know, she goes back to March 17th when all the bars closed. Again, that was St. Patty's Day. And then she's taking it forward here through the beginning of May. Because I think then that helps us too to figure out where we're going to start this timeline and how we're, you know, we obviously you're always trying to compress it as much as possible so you can go deeper and not spend time on moments that aren't going to matter to the story. So, and this one's a little tricky because, like Lane said, we don't have a ton of scenes. We don't, and we've had to do some reporting over the phone, which is also not usual. But I do like that idea of starting with the last day and then ending with the first day back, right? That you like that?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
So we start with the last day. Then obviously you have to leave us with a sense of doom, fear, right? You leave us with a sense of, oh, you don't know, she's going away and she doesn't know how long this is going to last. And she doesn't know what it's going to mean for her family, right?
Exactly, right. Is there even going to be a restaurant to come back to, you know?
Right. And then obviously, so we've got to take her through these weeks and you've got to weave in and out of what she's doing, you know, week two, week three, week four, whatever. But we do have to introduce people. So I don't know if the second section becomes, let's meet this woman, right? Let's tell you her backstory.
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, because one of her earliest memories is like 3 years old. She's sitting in the kitchen watching somebody make gnocchi in the restaurant. You know, her whole world is restaurants.
Okay. So then that backstory maybe then explains becoming a waitress, right? And that's mm-hmm. been her world. And she's, you know, started in restaurants back when she was a teenager and she's 40 now and still working in them. And, you know, I think maybe a nod to what she loves about it, you know, what is it, how it defines her there.
Yeah, I like her as a character because she is so passionate about what she does. You know, it's not like I'm waiting tables while I'm going to nursing school. You know, it's not like this is sick tiding me over. It's like, this is my passion. And
this is who she is. Yeah.
Taking care of people, you know, nurturing people. And that plays out a bit too with her son, I think, because she didn't have anybody to nurture but little Otto, and he was kind of like, back off, mom, you know, let me do my video game here. And I think that was an interesting dynamic too.
Her other kids are older, right?
Yeah, so her teenage daughter was living with her dad mostly, and then the other daughter is living on her own. She's like 22, 23, has her own place.
Okay, so we're starting the story with the last day. And she goes off scared, not sure what's going to happen. Then we have a section where we tell the backstory, you know, how she became a waitress, how it defines her and what she loves about it, right? And then maybe there's a section that kind of takes us through these weeks. Because I feel like you're going to, there's a lot of sameness in the weeks, right?
There is a lot of sameness.
Yeah, so I don't know that we need to devote a ton of time and energy into week two, she's doing this. Week three, she's doing this. But maybe you have a whole section that sort of takes you through the weeks that are going by, how she's applying for unemployment, you know, not really happy about it, but applying for food stamps, learning to juggle with her son, homeschooling, but also then trying to cook, which is, you know, different for her, not something that happens. And so then you start fleshing out kind of, and with fear still an underlying thing, then she's agonizing, I guess, about the money, about in the landlord giving her a break and all that other stuff, right? And then running errands for her parents. I mean, that might be a meaty section, but I think you kind of let the weeks go by and sort of flesh out what she's doing.
I think I could do a scene in her kitchen with Otto, you know, that would sort of like put us there and then expand it to include, like, you know, what, so she went bike riding this week. Now she went kayaking this week. Oh, she took a walk around the lake. But the only thing that changes is what she does outside for exercise, you know, where her house is super tiny. And so, you know, she's like, there isn't even any more room on the walls to hang my pictures. Like, she hung up pictures and framed things and redecorated. She's like, I mopped my floor 8 times in the past week. Like, you know, what's she doing to keep busy? She wasn't able to sleep. She was trying to find, like, funny old sitcoms on TV to cheer her up, because she was very honest. I mean, she got really sad and gloomy at some places, you know, and the loneliness, I think, on the days that Otto wasn't there, you know, were real hard for her. Like, when he'd go back to his dad's, the walls were closing in a bit, you know.
Well, maybe, you know, another thought is that we take all those weeks and split them in half and, like, sort of do the early weeks. You have a scene in the kitchen, and then you walk us through the early weeks and, you know, the tension's building in different ways. Because I was thinking, you need a section at some point talking to the owner and maybe drawing back to, you know, obviously she's one of thousands who are having the same experience. So you could find a sort of nice natural breaking point of, like, where the tension has been building, and then you pull away, have a section with the owner, and talk a little bit about the broader context across Florida, across the world. You know, this is a crew of people who, you know, like you said, live paycheck to paycheck, and the anxiety about what's happening. And then maybe you come back to her and kind of lead up to her getting back to work. Maybe there's a little bit of lead up, a little bit of, okay, what's she doing, what she's been doing in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Right. So if we go from, you know, you got all of, well, you got sort of a month from mid-May to mid-April to late April, maybe mid-May to late April, you're telling me what's happening to her. And then mid-March to late April. And then the owner, and then you come back to these first weeks of March. Now I got all my months. First weeks of May. Sorry, not enough coffee. And then leading back to that first day, and then you go to that scene.
That makes sense? Because I interviewed him on the 24th, on April 24th, and they were just starting to talk about reopening at that point in time.
Okay.
So I think that would be a good place to break it. Like, if we go from, you know, St. Patrick's Day to the 24th of April, and then let him sort of help us rise above about the industry as a whole, you know.
Okay.
And he actually, this is kind of interesting. He had, he said if he had, he closed before they made them close. Like, he wasn't even doing takeout or anything like that, because he said he saw the fear. Oh, this goes back to your theme. See, he saw the fear in his workers' eyes. One of them had gone to New York and been exposed to somebody who might have been exposed to somebody. And he said this ripple through the kitchen was just palpable. So he shut down. So his workers wouldn't keep getting exposed. But he said, if he'd known, you know, that they would hear it would be the end of April and they still wouldn't have gotten unemployment, he wouldn't have done it. So he was starting to regret it then for them financially, and starting to see some of the suppliers falling out, and thought, oh, I need to start reordering supplies if I'm going to keep these guys in business.
Right.
But he didn't know you know, on that day on the 24th when I talked to him, he wasn't sure when they were going to reopen or how or what. He was just saying, we need to talk about it, you know. And he sent a survey out, which is kind of interesting. They have a group text. He's got 60 employees in his three restaurants. So he sent a survey out to Ma and said, who wants to come back to work? Who doesn't want to come back to work? Who would come back to work but is still scared? And like 90% of them said that, I want to come back to work, but I'm still scared. So that kind of, it would be a nice place to pause, I think, and look at some of those things he's weighing as an owner as well, you know?
So yeah, I'm thinking about just listening to you and looking at your timeline and thinking about all the things you probably, having worked with Lane for a while, I know there's a lot in her notebook. So, so I'm thinking, yeah, okay. So the scene in the kitchen, you know, works you back into her life, and you go from mid-March to April 24th, not so specific to those dates, but then you hand off and you go to a section with the owner and talking about him looking back and looking forward and talking about the bigger scope of what's happening, and everybody's kind of anxious. And then you come back to her and you have these first couple weeks of May where she's getting ready to go back, and that tees you up to the first day back, which you'll hopefully get a chance to see and have that be the ending, right?
And yeah.
Now, again, then there's a different kind of fear, but you know, this is what she loves. This is what she's missed. And that's how we go. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would work. And my other question is, she gave me names of a bunch of other coworkers, like a dishwasher, a busboy, a cook. Do we want to talk to other people? Or right now, like, she and the owner are pretty much my only sources, you know?
I don't think it would be bad to get one or two others to just kind of get some feel for whether people spend it differently. Did they have sort of the same experience as she had in terms of their anxiety and what's been going on? Of course, I think you also might get some of that connection when you go for the first day, when she goes back, you might have them, might be able to talk to a couple people there.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, say, okay. And I think you can also, if he's okay with you sharing his survey results, like, you know, this is kind of a look at how everybody's feeling, right?
Right. Yeah. I think he's fine with that.
Yeah. But yeah. It wouldn't hurt. But I wouldn't, you know, like, I feel like, sounds like she's pretty typical of what's been going on and what people have been struggling through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, maybe what you do is in that section where you talk about the owner and your 3,000 foot view, maybe you have a person who went off to work at Publix, or you have somebody who went off here or there, and you just mentioned that, you know, some of the others had felt like they had to go do this, you know, they really didn't have a choice.
And the people who don't want to come back yet, who aren't, you know, ready to come back, he's told them they'll have a job, but just take the time you need, which Allison was also kind of grateful for, because that would mean she would get more hours, you know. Yeah. I mean, they're all going to be operating at, what, 25% capacity. So as it is, it's going to be dicey trying to,
right,
you know, keep a profit up.
Right, right. Is he going to go to takeout too? Is that what he's doing?
They do take out for lunch at Baba, where she works. Hers is more of a fine dining, where the bodega is almost all carry out at the window.
Right.
Hers is more of a sit down fine dining, like a Lebanese restaurant.
Right.
So she said, yeah, they're going to have to start doing, they were going to try to figure out take out carrier, you know, carry out containers and stuff and change the menu.
Okay. Does that sound good?
Yeah, no, I think that'll work.
Okay. So typically what we do now is that I will go and open a Google Doc and write down, like, put a little script together based on what Lane and I have just talked about, a little outline, and I'll send it to her and say, okay, this is what I this is what I wrote down, and to make sure I have, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sections in this story, and hopefully that just make sure we're on the same page and that feels good to her and that, you know, we have the right flow. But hope that was helpful. Hope you guys can use that in your own work as you debate stories. Anything else you want to add, Lane?
Well, I only have 5 sections, so I'm anxious to see your outline.
I was breaking up the weeks that have gone by into 2 sections. And then I was making the first day back its own section. That's what I was doing.
So read me yours. So first day back.
Well, last day would be the first section.
Sorry,
And there's a section of backstory, who she is, the job, you know, how it defines her, why she loves it. Okay, then another section is starts with the scene in the kitchen and some of the weeks going by, and here you're going to move from about mid-March to April 24th. Then there's a section with the owner talking and kind of the bigger context. Then you come back to her for the first weeks of May and, you know, catch up with where she is and how she's feeling. And then after that section, you have the section of her first day back.
Okay, so I had those two as one section.
Yeah.
So okay.
No, I was trying to give you some room because I know my people.
And I'm going to get there when she gets there tonight at 4. Do you think I should stay for the whole shift or just stay for a few tables and get a scene there?
Yeah, I don't think you need to stay for the whole shift. I mean, safety-wise, too, I think, you know, keep your distance, wear your mask, and, you know, just see a little of the process. I feel like a lot might happen right at the beginning with her just being excited to be there, you know? And you can always call her back and just see if anything momentous happened or anything she wants to talk about. But, you know, she's got, how long a shift does she have tonight?
5 to 9.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're okay with just the start of the shift a little bit, see her get back into the groove.
Okay. And James will be there too, the photographer. So he'll get pictures of an ending that way.
Okay. All right. So this was our experiment. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you have a question for Lane or want to suggest a podcast topic, please email it to writelane@tampabay.com. That's writelane@tampabay.com. Or come talk to us on our Facebook group. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Allison Graves. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.